Test.
Check this out.
Ranger.
Autonomous Action Radio, a multimedia radio show, a website, an idea, a suggestion, an action plan. Because it's up to us now.
This communique will most likely be marked and destroyed shortly after it is discovered. Listen on at your own risk.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times.
Hello, welcome to the 4ZZZ Aniki show. My name is Linda. What can I say? I'm a bit lost for words of what to say about the G20 this weekend. Other people have said many things. Some people are very happy with their protests, with the march that they did on the prescribed route that the police had agreed to, or the police enforced. And other people, however, are a bit more cynical, perhaps a bit more critical of the protests and of the resistance. And I don't want to be criticizing people. A lot of work went into organizing the resistance, the protest against the G20. However, there's something I think which needs to be said, and that is when the march sticks to the predetermined police route, and it was nowhere near the G20 leaders or the G20 public, who is the protest for? If you choose to work with the police and then the police are happy because you did what they wanted you to do, have you taken part in civil disobedience? And perhaps if you're not aiming to take part in civil disobedience, if you want to bring attention to your cause, and there was some attention paid to the protests. But even as someone, a journalist from Press TV, which is a media organization from Iran, which is generally thought to be very close to the Islamic regime in Iran, as someone, one of their reporters said, it is unsure whether anyone in the actual meeting even noticed the protests, and I'd say that they were actually quite happy about the protests, that people, they would say it's well done, people got to voice their opinions, and they'll just keep on doing what they're going to do anyway. I think it's important to talk about Obama and his commitment to greenhouse gas emission reduction, and he did very well. I mean, even I was starting to get the Obama goggles and like him, especially compared to Tony Abbott's performance. But then, is it really enough to save the planet from irreversible climate change? And as we've been hearing previously on this show, it is not enough to save the planet from irreversible climate change. And the heat wave in Brisbane, what better way to demonstrate the effects of global warming? There was one hotter day in November in 1913. It's not about one hot day, it's about a series of hot days, and that indicates climate change. Coming up on today's show, I'm going to be playing an interview that was aired on publicbroadcasting.net in America. It's just a segment of it, which the Stimulator put up on YouTube, and it's Travis Smiley and Cornel West, who are two liberal kind of commentators, media people that had a show called Smiley and West. They're black liberal commentators. Their show doesn't air anymore, but they interviewed Peter Gelderloos, author of How Nonviolence Protects the State. We're going to be listening to that interview today. Also, I've got some great music. There's a great compilation that came out called the Briz G20 compilation, with a whole lot of kind of underground experimental artists. We'll try and listen to some of those. But first of all, it's time to revisit this Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Tony Abbott.
America. Everyone knows it's the greatest nation on earth, and our leaders are the greatest leaders on earth. But did you know there are other countries that are not America, and each of them has a leader of its very own? Let's take a moment to meet one in our ongoing series, Other Countries, Presidents of the United States. This week's leader, Tony Abbott, Prime Minister of Australia. The island nation famed for its bouncing kangaroos and bloomin' onions. Its current leader, hardline right-wing Prime Minister Tony Abbott, who rose to power promising to be pro-business and religiously anti-immigration. Literally, religiously anti-immigration.
And Jesus knew that there was a place for everything, and it is not necessarily everyone's place to come to Australia.
Exactly. Australia is for real Australians, like Tony Abbott, who was born in London, England. It's that kind of rhetorical consistency that's won him the admiration of his predecessors.
If Tony Abbott ends up the Prime Minister of Australia, I mean, you've got to say, God help us. God help us.
Tributes in song. And the love of Australia's children.
My mummy calls him Tony Dum Dum because she thinks he is so, dumb.
What is it about Tony Dum Dum that's led to his current approval rating of 30%? Could it be that he's personally insulted everyone else in the country, from women...
The housewives of Australia need to understand as they do the ironing.
...to gays...
Homosexuality,
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I probably feel a bit threatened.
To anyone remotely Irish.
This government's a bit like the Irishman who lost £10 betting on the Grand National and then lost £20 on the action replay.
To elderly, cancer-ridden phone sex workers.
Tony Abbott has been filmed winking during a radio show.
I'm a 67-year-old pensioner, 3 chronic incurable medical conditions, 2 life-threatening, and I work on an adult sex line to make ends meet.
To incredibly this.
Tony Abbott has been caught out seemingly insulting a Queensland soldier killed in Afghanistan. After being told about the complications of the firefight, this is Mr. Abbott's reaction.
Sometimes shit does happen. Luckily, Tony Abbott is a master of words and can talk himself out of any situation.
Look, a soldier has died. And you shouldn't be trying to turn this into a subsequent media circus.
How's that turning into a media circus? Okay, well, tell me, what's the context? And if it's out of context, what is the context? You're not saying anything, Tony.
I've given you the response you deserve.
Yes, Tony Abbott knows one panicked, pants-shitting expression is worth 1,000 words. And what a way with words Tony Abbott has.
No one, however smart, however well-educated, however experienced, is the suppository of all wisdom.
But if anyone is the suppository of wisdom, surely it's Tony Abbott, a man who always knows exactly what to say or not to say, and who's won exactly as much respect from his constituents as he deserves.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Dig it.
There's a worldwide revolution going on.
And in my opinion, the young generation of white, black, brown, whatever else there is, you're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
What is it revolting against? Power structure. The American power structure? No. The French power structure? No. The English power structure? No. Then what power structure? An international Western power structure.
And I, for one, will join in with anyone. Don't care what color you are, as long as you want to change this miserable condition that exists on this earth. And there's got to be a change. People in power have misused it, and now there has to be a change, and a better world has to be built, and the only way it's going to be built is with extreme methods.
So what you and I have got to do is get involved. You and I have to be right there breathing down their throat. Every time they look over their shoulder, we want them to see us.
Once those intentions are made known, we can get to the nitty-gritty of the problem. We can get to the core of the problem. We can get to the root of the problem. And then we can correct the problem.
I don't want no Obama.
Glenn Beck is a racist. Gaza Strip was getting bombed. Obama
Heavenly
didn't say shit.
Father, may I holler at you briefly? I wanna meet the president, but will he meet me? Is he scared to look inside the eyes of a thug nigga? He's tired of being scapegoats for this capitalistic drug dealing. How hypocritical is liberty? That blind bitch ain't never did shit for me. My history full of casket and scars. My own black nation at war, whole family behind bars. And they wonder why we scarred. 13 looking hard. Sister had a baby as an adolescent. What was gone? Somewhere in the middle of my mind is a nigga on a tightrope screaming, let him die. Can't lie, I'm a thug, drowning in my own blood, looking for the reason that my mama's strung out of drugs. Figure if we hide, they could train us, but then America fucked up and blamed us. Damn the die for everything I represent, man. Every word in my letter to the president.
Strip
was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. After you divorce yourself from the right-wing propaganda campaign, it's all simple and plain. America can stand the game. Your president got an African name. Now who you gon' blame when they drop them bombs out of them planes using depleted uranium? Babies looking like two-headed aliens. Follow the money trail that leads to the criminal, and nothing subliminal to it. That's how they do it. See the game they running. Give a fuck if he's cunning, articulate, and handsome. Afghanistan held for ransom by the hand of this black man. Neo-colonial puppet, white power with a black face. He said, fuck it, I'll do it. A master of disguise, expert at telling lies. Then they gave him a Nobel Peace Prize. Should've known he was trained in Chicago. Word to Chairman Fred and Mark Clark. What they do in the dark will come out in the light like a WikiLeaks site. So I guess Nkrumah was right. Who's ready to fight? Last stage of imperialism, I ain't kidding. In the immortal words of Marvin Gaye, this ain't living. Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit.
OBAMA, you ain't fooling everyone, I see the games you play. You was VIP at the BIC, and we know that's the code name for CIA. The same way your cameras are watching us, we're watching you. Think we're easy to control, you ain't got a clue. Revolution's on the way, let's see what you're gonna do. You're gonna send the troops, you're gonna drop the nukes. See, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. He's sitting in the White House, so who cares if he's black? And why is there soldiers still out there in the rack? Natural resources ain't yours, it's theirs, give it back. You're just another puppet, but I'm not surprised. Look at Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. They didn't change shit, house niggas fresh off the slave ship. You all burn in hell, even Michelle Obama Nation.
Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit.
I really think the war on terror is a bunch of bullshit. Just a poor excuse for you to use up all your bullets. How much money does it take to really make a full clip? 9-11 building 7, did they really pull it? And a bunch of other cover-ups. Your child's future was the first to go with budget cuts. If you think that hurts, then wait, here comes the uppercut. The school was garbage in the first place, that's on the up and up. Keep you at the bottom, but tease you with the upper crust. You get it, then they move it, so you never keeping up enough. If you turn on TV, all you see is a bunch of what the fucks. Dude is dating so-and-so, blabbering about such-and-such. And that ain't Jersey Shore, homie, that's the news. And these the same people supposedly telling us the truth. Limo is a racist, Glenn Beck is a racist. Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. That's why I ain't vote for next one either. I'm a part of the problem. My problem is I'm peaceful, and I believe in the people.
Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit.
What's the bigger threat from Osama or from Obama? Military bases from Chagos to Okinawa. I say things that other rappers won't say, cause my mind never closed like Guantanamo Bay. Hope you didn't build a statue or tattoo your arm, cause the drones are still flying over Pashtunistan. Did he defend the war?
No.
He extended more, even had the time to attempt a coup in Ecuador. Morales and Chavez, the states are on the hunt for ya. Military now stationed on bases in Colombia. Take a trip to the past and tell them I was right. Ask Ali Abu Nima and Jeremiah Wright. Drones over Pakistan, Yemen and Libya. Is Obama the bomber getting ready for Syria? First black president, the masses were hungry, but the same president just bombed an African country like...
Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit.
The Jonas Brothers are here. They're out there somewhere. Sasha and Malia are huge fans. But boys don't get any ideas. I have two words for you. Predator drones. You will never see it coming. You think I'm joking?
were just hearing one of the songs from the Disconcerted Sounds Brisbane Artists Against the G20 compilation, and that song was called A Different Address. I've had a time to listen to them all. They're all kind of short, catchy tunes like that one. I mentioned a comment from Twitter, and Flaming Galah, Layabout Elf, was the person who authored the comment that I read out, and they replied, I'm presuming it's a he, Layabout Elf. Obama is a slick operator and is charismatic must-have traits for a capitalist leader. And it's true, Obama is basically the product of a huge PR campaign. He is the product. Obama is a product, and that's why he's so nice. He knew exactly what to say to get the Australian people on side. Now, I talked about the interview I was going to play with Peter Gelderloos, who is the author of How Nonviolence Helps the State. And this is an interview he did with Smiley and West.
When you write a book called How Nonviolence Protects the State, when you write another book called The Failure of Nonviolence, what's the message you're trying to get out about nonviolence specifically? Because those who believe, say, in Kingian nonviolence, when they hear a book called The Failure of Nonviolence, I think it might prick their ears.
Yeah. Basically, these books, both of them in different historical moments, because the first one was written about 8 years ago, they analyze how nonviolence functions within movements for social change to make sure that those movements will continuously be co-opted, to make sure that they don't go beyond the barriers that have been set up to acceptable change under government, under capitalism. The Failure of Nonviolence, the most recent book, focuses on what nonviolence looks like today. And nonviolence today, while it may make a lot of brief references to Martin Luther King or to Gandhi, both of whom participated in complex struggles that included nonviolent elements as well as more combative elements, the actual face of nonviolence today has changed a lot. It's reflected a lot more by the method of nonviolence espoused by Gene Sharp, which is a method associated with, for example, the so-called color revolutions of the last years. These were basically mass movements that flooded the streets, flooded the squares, and used a very lowest common denominator sort of discourse. Each movement had, you know, a single word slogan and a color that they identified with, and they basically created a crisis in governance. Now, a crisis in governance is not enough to create an actual social transformation, because it doesn't change who has power. It simply means that those in power need to change their masks, they need to offer up another false solution, and that's what's happened in every single one of these color revolutions. I could just as easily have called this book The Success of Nonviolence, because if you look at all the successes of nonviolent social movements over the last 20 years, that's the maximum of what they've accomplished. They've accomplished a cosmetic change in which those in power shift around, but the same fundamental problems continue. And then they go on to hail these changes as a victory.
So if nonviolence worked for Gandhi and it worked for King, what's bankrupt about nonviolence as we know it today? I hear your critique. I'm just trying to figure out now what's missing for those who believe in nonviolent struggles, for those who practice that in a contemporary setting, what's missing?
Well, first of all, I think we need to question the idea that nonviolence worked for King and for Gandhi, because both of those were at best partial victories. Mm-hmm. Institutionalized racism continues perhaps stronger than before in the United States. India shifted from being a colony to a neo-colony. It's still exploited by a lot of the same powers. It has a political system inherited from colonialism. But those achievements, those partial victories that each of those movements achieved, can't be attributed solely to nonviolence. They came from movements that used a diversity of tactics. During the civil rights movement, for example, you had Martin Luther King. You also had groups like the Deacons of Defense that practiced armed self-defense against the violence of the Klan or the violence of the police. In fact, a number of times Martin Luther King, in his marches and rallies, used the Deacons of Defense to protect them. Or you also have the Black Panthers, and then a number of urban uprisings, for example, the riots in Birmingham that are really the direct predecessor, the direct trigger for the Civil Rights Act. And then if you look at King's evolution, his political evolution later in life, he started talking about being in solidarity with the Vietnamese in their struggle against U.S. occupation. He started talking sympathetically with young black urban rioters. And the kind of nonviolence that we have today is this extreme denunciation of any form of social struggle that is illegal, that is combative, that is forceful, that doesn't ask for permission, and that doesn't wait and play by the rules. It's a nonviolence that has people cooperating with the mass media, cooperating with the police against fellow protesters, against fellow activists and other people in the streets in order to eliminate all of those other forms of struggle. So I think that there's obviously room in a social struggle, in a social movement, for all different sorts of people, for people who prefer peaceful methods, for people who prefer direct action and self-defense. But those who prefer peaceful methods, I think they need to stop identifying with an exclusive nonviolence and acknowledge that all social movements are heterogeneous, all social movements are diverse, and they can't control other people's participation in a social movement. They should start looking towards how they can cooperate, how these different forms of participation can complement one another.
Peter Gildaloo's there talking to Smiley and West on an American public broadcasting channel. You're on Autonomous Action Radio, The Anarchy Show, and we've got another section of that interview with Peter Gildaloo's talking about nonviolence. And I think it's important what he says there about diversity of tactics. And yes, there are people that are happy to do a non-violent street march and raise awareness, get media attention. But then there's also people who might want to push the barriers and do a bit more direct action. Some direct action that did happen on the weekend was the Climate Angels, who were dressed up with fluffy wings, being angels. They came up, they were on the march. They did a photo shoot in South Bank in the water of the pools in South Bank, I guess, which was symbolic of the rising tides. But then they also went to somewhere near where Tony Abbott was going to be, and they refused to. They blocked an entrance. Somewhere I read they went inside the exclusion zone. I'm not sure if they got totally in, where they got a bit in, or they blocked an entrance, and they refused to leave until Tony Abbott talked to them. However, Tony Abbott didn't talk to them. They were there for several hours. Bill Shorten came out and talked to them, for what that was worth. In the end, they negotiated with the police, and the police drove them home or to the pub, I guess, because they're dressed as angels. No one wants to hurt an angel. So the police were fine. I'm going to play a song now by Remember Me Feral. This is called Resistance.
People often mistake the spirit of resistance. They see it as anger and hatred and imagine its taste to be bitter. But resistance is founded in love. We find some things so beautiful and love them so deeply, so urgently, that when we identify systemic oppression that endangers them, we must resist. People often misjudge this motivation and feel it's a personal attack on them as individuals. But resistance is not something to be feared or to hold disdain for. Resistance is a passionate movement for the preservation of beauty. Resistance is a passionate movement for the preservation of beauty.
Thank you.
I love the enemy. I stare them in the eye and say I love you. Thus you can't bury me. I love resistance, I love the way it carries me. I love resistance, those in the struggle so terribly. I love resistance, I love to cherish and protect beauty. Identify and hold close all I love truly. I love resistance, I love the movements, I love pursuance. But when the system cracks, we break through it. It's love that fuels my desire to resist. Act in defiance, violently grasp my bliss. It's love that pulls its energy up inside me. Guides me, fills me, pushes me to fight thee. I love resistance, I love diversity of tactics. From lawyers and suits to a bank window as you crack it. I love resistance, I love standing up to oppression. I love my obsession, I love watching the enemy crumble beneath the schemes. Landing our dreams, I love our dreams, I love our dreams.
That was Remember Me Feral with Resistance, and I think that message is very important, that resistance and anger comes from love. People being angry or wanting to do direct action, wanting to stand up for something that they believe in, they're not angry because of negative things, they're angry because of positive things and things that they love. When I was riding my bike home on Saturday, apart from all the police and the road blocks, I was thinking how beautiful Brisbane is, riding along the river, through the botanical gardens and along the bike path and the Brisbane River. And of course, the diversity of species is nowhere near what it was when Brisbane was invaded. But it's still beautiful. There's still beautiful things to look at in the sky, and in even the Brisbane River looked quite nice. I'm going to play the second half of this interview with Peter Gelderloos, author of How Nonviolence Protects the State and the Failure of Nonviolence. He's also written some good stuff on police, if you want to look him up. And he's being interviewed by some American public broadcasters, Smiley and West.
Now, in about a week, we're going to be together in New York City, a number of us saluting the great Dorothy Day, who, as you know, was an anarchist, as was Bayard Rustin, and as was Henry David Thoreau, as is Noam Chomsky, and others. But she seems to actually be a figure, and I'd like to get to reflect a bit on her, who recognized that reform was never enough, and that even nonviolent attempts to reform would never be enough. But she also recognized that revolution, though desirable in terms of a fundamental transformation of a society done in a humane way, seemed to be so marginal or so unlikely. And therefore, she's caught on a tightrope between reform and revolution. But what do you make of her dilemma, Dominic?
Well, I think Dorothy Day is an important historical figure to remember. I don't necessarily see a dilemma between reform and revolution. I think that we need to fight for revolution. I think we need to fight for total social transformation, even if it's highly unlikely. I mean, if Dorothy Day recognized it as unlikely in her time, it's even more unlikely in our time. But by shooting for the moon, that really is also one of the best chances of making things better in small ways right here and right now. I mean, most of the major reforms that actually constitute betterments of our lives, because a lot of reforms, most reforms probably, are really just a shuffling of the cards and a way to co-opt people's energy to rejuvenate the system. But the few reforms that actually make life better, like, for example, having the 8-hour workday or healthcare or bathroom breaks, or people being able to go into whatever bar, or restaurant, or public space they want, regardless of their skin color. Really, those changes came about when people went for broke, tried to shoot the moon, and totally transform society, and upset the system so much that those in power had to offer something, they had to give away something in order to keep from losing the whole game.
I think you're right about that, though. It's just that, especially among the younger generation, you know, how do you make a case that a commitment to moral integrity, even if the consequences are something far down the road, is worth opting for? We live in a short-term society, market-driven, obsessed with capital, obsessed with status, wealth, position, and stature, and therefore the idea of the life that you live, though, Brother Peter, which I see is very similar to Dorothy Day and King, which is to say, look, regardless of the consequences, this is the kind of person I want to be, and that means I will be a revolutionary who tells the truth about the depths of exploitation and domination, even if I'm pushed to the margins, and even if it looks as if the one-dimensional society, use the language of Herbert Marcuse, will co-opt the movement, will repress the movement, will somehow dilute the movement, and I attempt to preserve not purity but integrity. I mean, can that case be made, especially to the younger generation?
I think so. I think in the last years, you've seen a lot more young people start to rebel, start to think for themselves. I think they're paying a lot less attention to the mass media. All across the world now, you see different movements like that. You have a student movement in the UK. You have some of the most marginalized youth, immigrant youth, and youth of color in the US rising up in response to police violence or the racism of immigration policy in the United States in the last few years. In Chile, for example, there's a huge student movement with students going on strike and taking over the streets. To a lesser extent, there's always also been a strong student movement here in Spain, also with students going on strike and taking over the streets. So, I mean, it always starts with a small group you know, doing what they have to do regardless of the consequences, and sometimes that resonates with people, and a small drop becomes a big wave, and it just takes off. But
Peter, I wonder whether your version of rebellion or revolution tolerates violence of any sort, and if so, under what conditions?
Well, I think my major criticism of nonviolence, or at least the first one, is that violence isn't a meaningful category. I mean, in this one box, in this one word, we have things like what governments do, like carpet bombing cities, or forcing entire populations into mass starvation, or locking people up in solitary confinement for years on end, like Herman Wallace, who just died after 41 years in solitary for a crime he didn't commit, mm-hmm. with other kinds of activities that are also described as violent that include self-defense. For example, queer and trans people defending themselves from homophobic attackers on the streets, or you know, people who have been kicked out of their houses for not being able to pay the mortgage, smashing the bank that did that to them. So we're also talking about, you know, destruction of property. People on the bottom of the social hierarchy rising up against people on top. And those different activities, the activity of the powerful and those of the rest of us, follow completely different logics. And I don't think they actually reproduce one another. So I think that self-defense is completely legitimate. I think destroying the structures in our society that are poisoning us, that are exploiting us, is completely legitimate. And what we do have, for example, like the 8-hour workday, or, you know, women being able to participate as equals in society, or an end to at least legal segregation, if not other forms of institutionalized racism, those didn't come from people following the law and being only peaceful, although there were peaceful forms of participation in all those movements. They came from people fighting back. And if we don't recognize the tactics that gave us what little we have as legitimate, tactics like the strike, sabotage, defending ourselves from the police, from state surveillance, from armed racists, if we can't recognize those things as legitimate, then we might as well just give up what little we still have that they haven't been able to take from us.
I mean, your argument, for example, would certainly support the spirit of the nation that Nelson Mandela and others founded in South Africa, which was armed struggle, though, right?
Absolutely.
Indeed. But I mean, I think we make a distinction, Brother Tavis, making a distinction between rebellion and revolution. Rebellion being the expression of the outrage of those who have been mistreated and abused. And it's not tied to a plan. It may not even be tied to a vision. It's just a kind of cathartic expression that does generate concessions from the powers that be, as opposed to a much more revolutionary conception of structural transformation, where people are really tied to a certain vision of the world and it has organizations that are attuned to that vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think often rebellions give rise to revolutions. Rebellions give people practice in learning that they can stand up for themselves, and then it shows them a farther horizon. And then within that, of course, there's going to be a lot of disagreement. There's going to be a lot of conflict about what's acceptable and what's not, what's helpful and what's harmful. But those decisions can't be handed down from above. They certainly can't be written in some book and imposed across an entire society. They need to happen through face-to-face conflict and criticism and engagement. We need to accept that conflict is actually a good thing within our social movements, so that when other people do things that we find are harmful, we don't freak out and run and denounce them to the press or to the police, but we make those criticisms and we show a different, better way of doing things while moving forward and recognizing that none of us have the ultimate answers and we're learning as we go.
I think you're right, Peter, about the fact that conflict is good. I don't think there's any disagreement there. I guess the question is where the line is between responding to your oppressors and becoming just like your oppressors. That was the rub for Gandhi and King, that you don't want to become like those who oppress you.
I think that's actually a really important consideration. Myself, as an anarchist, I approach that question differently than proponents of nonviolence tend to approach it. I don't think rebelling or fighting back is what makes someone like their oppressor. I think it's taking power and holding power over others. So someone who defends themselves, they're not oppressing the person that they're defending themselves from. In fact, if that person is a bully, whether an institutional bully or just a bully on a personal level, by facing that resistance, they're actually getting an opportunity to learn, to correct their ways, and to stop being this oppressive figure. If you don't have an ethic of anti-authoritarianism or of equality and sharing and mutual aid, then when you win in a struggle, you have the opportunity to turn yourself into a new authority. So the typical example is the Russian Revolution, where the Bolsheviks took power and then they became the new authorities, possibly even worse than the ones that came before them. But this wasn't because they took the path of armed struggle. The Bolsheviks always had an authoritarian ideology. From the beginning, they were promising to inaugurate a dictatorship, and that's exactly what they did.
That was Peter Gildaloo's there, speaking about nonviolence, and you can actually listen to that whole thing online. Just do a search for Peter Gildaloo's and Stimulator or Peter Gildaloo's Smiley and West. That brings us to the moment. We're going to listen to a song and then come back and hear exclusively about the G20 Black Bloc Party that set Brisbane on fire. If reality fails you, there's always fantasy. We're going to hear a song from Mark's Sick Mind, a local artist, and this is called Resistance as well.
Now, Marks, lock and load, you ready? Fuck police killing innocent people locally, and fuck the government killing innocent people overseas. Names we won't be told cause they're from other countries, but they are babies, children, mothers and fathers. So fuck your money, materialism, obsession with possessions. I'm more concerned with imperialism and oppression. Consequences are still in effect from post-colonialism, and you don't even know who's controlling the system you live in. I'm not talking Illuminati, just follow the blood money and all the dead human bodies. From Fallujah, Afghanistan and Iran to Sudan, Cuba and Vietnam. Can you believe they call it spreading democracy and people eat it up like a stupid fucking flock of sheep headed to slaughter? There's a cause for all the mental disorders, just like soldiers' post-traumatic stress disorder. This is resistance.
This is for all the innocent victims. This is resistance. Sisters, brothers, fathers, mothers, children. This is resistance. They never get justice. This is why I'm militant. This is resistance. Fuck the system, deconstruct the system. This is revolution.
Why am I always so angry? I often get this question. I say if you ain't pissed off, you ain't paying attention. School shootings are tragic, but kids are killed by drones, and the West don't show the same compassion. I'm taking action. What can I do but tell the truth to you and hope we start a chain reaction? Change will happen only if you make it happen. Che Guevara rebel army, they label as terrorists after they invade our country. There are men who become terrorists not cause they were extremists, but cause they saw their people get blown into pieces. I'm not justifying it, I'm asking why is it and identifying it. By trying to identify bodies that's been bombed. Third degree burns on babies, limbs gone. I speak out for them in songs, cause we don't hear the struggling plight. We just hear about what to buy and fucking lies. This is resistance. This is for all the innocent victims. This is resistance. Sisters, brothers, fathers, mothers, children. This is resistance. They never get justice. This is why I'm militant. This is resistance. Fuck the system, deconstruct the system. This is revolution. You shouldn't have to ask me why I'm mad at the system. Slave labor was the capital for capitalism. Many of us are descended from when they raped our women. From Latinos to Filipinos. Impoverished nations, rich in natural resources, but they get exported, extorted. And democratically elected leaders face assassination unless they agree to the exploitation. They funded takeovers and sent the CIA, and I'm supposed to just know the government's good and believe everything they say? When they blatantly lie and break promises to this day, like Guantanamo Bay, where prisoners are detained and never convicted of a crime, but they're tortured and never been a trial. I'm from where they murder journalists in opposition, so guerrillas kill corrupt cops and politicians. This is resistance. This is for all the innocent victims. This is resistance. Sisters, brothers, fathers, mothers, children. This is resistance. They never get justice. This is why I'm militant. This is resistance. Fuck the system, deconstruct the system. This is revolution.
You're tuned to the 4ZZZ Aniki Show on 102.1 FM or streaming on 4ZZZFM.org.au.
In a democracy, the ignorant and meddlesome outsiders, the general population, have to be kept from interfering. They can be spectators but not participants. Spectators but not participants. Spectators but not participants.
Okay, now is the time to hear the exclusive Autonomous Action Radio story about the G20 Black Bloc that set Black Bloc Party that set Brisbane on fire. And some of these events are real and some of them are not. And I'm pretty sure you can work out which ones are which. Also called Searching for the Black Bloc Party, which I did all weekend from Friday till Saturday night. The event we had all spent years waiting for was finally on. The G20 security ring of steel had been erected. South Brisbane was in serious lockdown. The media said the barricades were intimidating. South Brisbane, a fortress. All year, the media talked about a Black Bloc Party in Brisbane, so Megzy, Lemongrass and I went in search of it and to check the security arrangements. This is actually a picture essay if you go to autonomousactionradio.com searching for the Black Bloc Party. So things started off well in West End. We found a dumpster that looked like it was ready for the Black Bloc Party with plenty of things to throw. And we walked down towards the convention centre and found a sticker which seemed to be advertising the Black Bloc Party. It said, warning, G20 declared zone ahead. Hashtag OMG20WTF. And that's one of the groups who was involved in the G20. After this, we saw hundreds of the one time, the thin blue line. They looked rather plump. as I asked them if they knew about the Black Bloc Party, but they just wanted to go and sit in the shade. It was quite funny. It would have been good to record it, however, I probably would have been banned from going to the G20 if I had been recording. I could have done it surreptitiously, but I think it would have been a bit harder. It was all very spontaneous. Still, that many police are a sure sign that a Black Bloc Party is going to happen. Megzi tried to climb the barricades, but fell down. I climbed over the barricade, but it was really boring on the other side. The Ring of Steel was no match for Megzi, though. She kicked down a barricade and let me through. We kept walking. We found a sign that could be kicked over as part of the Black Bloc Party, but there's no one around to see it fall, so does it really fall at all? We found some security drivers and security guards or drivers. We asked them about the Black Bloc Party. They didn't know anything about it, but they said it sounded fun, and could we tell them if we found it? We went near a pub, found many casks of barrels of beer that would be fun for a Black Bloc Party. I found a dumpster and tipped it over in the hope of making a barricade so the police couldn't come and ruin our party. When we asked the police where the Black Bloc Party was, they also thought it sounded fun, and it would be fun until they turned up. There was a security guard who was not in the mood for a party, so Megan dealt with him true ninja style, although he didn't seem to mind. We also found some barricades and some loose projectiles which we could throw at the police if they came to ruin our fun. There were electricity, I guess, generators, and they would have been fun for powering the sound system. I talked to one officer, I think he was from New Zealand, about this, and he agreed with me. We found some other police. We're looking for the G20 Black Bloc Party. Do you know about it? No, Black Bloc Party, G20. Why don't we have segues? I didn't see any segues all weekend. I was very, very disappointed. We found a sign that said the abomination of the G20. So I thought maybe Loki was coming to the G20 Black Bloc Party. We found a road sign. We thought we better move it to block the street with it so we could stop Obama. There were some loose objects around that would make great shields for the party. We found someone with a whole lot of booze beside on the footpath. We thought he was getting ready to make Molotov cocktails. It was pretty quiet before the storm. The police didn't seem to notice that if you wear a bandana, it can be made into a mask, because I had one all weekend ready to make a mask. The police didn't seem to notice. The true colours of Brisbane were showing, the colours of genocide, the red, white and blue. And in the end, we gave an anarchist a cigarette and a Molotov cocktail, and the party really got started. Some police cars were on fire. We warned them to be careful where they parked in this extreme heat. Tony Abbott was pretty angry with us about the mess we made, but then he randomly started mentioning something about the budget and $7 GP co-payments. Angela Merkel thanked us for rioting because we made her feel right at home. And Putin offered to arm us, but we're not too sure. Can someone explain what these are? Dragunov SVD VPK3927 Volk VODKA 1000P VLAD 2000. And then Obama, he was really sad about how much CO2 we would have released in the atmosphere with the fires, because it's going to put a huge dent in his target to reduce greenhouse emissions. But then we reminded him about his zero-emissions fighter jet, and he calmed down, realizing how much of it was going to help save the planet. Brisbane isn't that boring after all. And another fun thing that happened, which you may have heard on Friday on 102.1 FM, was Operation Lizard Jam, a radio play put together by the crew from Monster, Zuko Ansom, and the Frog and Peach, and other people from Triple Z, including Chris Copcroft from the music department. And that is the end of the exclusive G20 Black Bloc Party story, which we managed to find. The good news is that the G20 is over, but we can still resist. We can still stand up for what we believe in, and there's plenty of other chances to get out there and make the world a better place. You've been listening to Autonomous Action Radio on Z Digital. For more information about the show, you can go to autonomousactionradio.com or 4ZZZFM.org.au.
This song is for all the political prisoners, both here and around the world. For the people incarcerated for fraud, stealing and larceny, and all other crimes involving property. For it's nothing but the state protecting the rich from the poor. Ever since we lost our common ground, that's what the law's been for. Friends, for those inside for drug offenses, does the state really care about your own misguided will? No, they're protecting the profits of the pharmaceutical and tobacco corporations.